Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Here we go. Luka's dazzling game winner. Watch it. You call that luck, or is that skill? Jadeveon Clowney has a new home. Is he going to be a game changer out in Cleveland? And Justin Fields made the throw yesterday. Was it overrated, underrated, or properly rated? With that, we say good Thursday morning, everyone. Look at that throw. Welcome to First Things First. Jenna, Nick, Brandon, who's all set, and Kevin Wild. Brandon, your Jets, those Jets were there. You think that changed their minds at all?
They were there. Jenna, I hope so. Look at this. Unbelievable. Let's go, Jet.
Right to the H in Ohio.
That is quite a throw. All right, we'll talk about what Justin Fields did yesterday, but we got to start in Philly. So last night was supposed to be Nets Sixers. Instead, it was Nets Sixers. Brooklyn with the unpopular decision to sit Kevin Durant last night. So no Durant, no Harden, no LaMarcus Aldridge, no Blake Griffin. And the Sixers took advantage. Joel Embiid took advantage, 39-13. Hey, this was actually a close game at the end. But Steve Nash went and set Kyrie Irving for the final 8-plus minutes. And the Sixers took the W. Here's Steve Nash on that decision after the game.
A little bit, you know, what a thought about it, but really, you know, I didn't want to take the group out that was doing so well. They put their starters back in. I think I wanted to reward those guys for playing as well as they did. Kyrie did was amazing for us tonight, but you know, he also has had a few days off. I didn't want to put him back in and risk any sort of return to play injury.
What? All right, Brandon, please explain. What did you make of Nash leaving Kyrie on the bench with a chance to beat the Sixers last night?
Listen, some people won't love it, all right? Some people hate it, but the Nets showed their hand, Jenna. That's all that was, is them showing their hand last night that they're not worried about the regular season. What they're worried about is making sure they get these guys to the playoffs full strength. That's what they're worried about, because everything else is taken care of. We're talking about a team that's sitting right there behind the 76ers after last night's loss in the East. So they're right where they need to be. And Nick, buddy, I know you were watching the game. I wanted to call you. I was going to FaceTime you, but I wanted you to watch the game in peace. You were shaking in your boots. You were shaking in your boots. We're talking about 8 minutes left in the game, down 22 points, and you have our JV squad. No Harden, no LaMarcus Aldridge, no Blake Griffin.
Right.
You took Kyrie out the game, and these boys pull within three. Yeah, I know the controversial decision. Oh, why didn't they put him back in? Because they're not worried about it. But we're talking about our JV team coming in this game, playing with so much momentum, so much confidence, so much tenacity, and almost getting it done. I'm telling you right now, I'm walking away from this game, Nick, more confident than ever, buddy.
Well, I actually understand why you would. And even though if the JV team staged the comeback, I guess it was the semi-varsity that, you know, played the first 40 minutes and was down by 22 and Embiid was having their way with them. But I understand why you'd be more confident. And the Nets certainly are confident. The Nets are so confident, they have decided that seeding and the regular season and tiebreakers are totally irrelevant, because they clearly believe they are simply far and away the best team in basketball. I disagree with them. And Kevin Wilds, I'm going to look into my old crystal ball, and I'm going to give you a very precise prediction. It is mid-June. The Philadelphia 76ers are resting at home in Philly, having dispatched of their first two playoff opponents in relatively easy manner. Joel Embiid playing inspired basketball after believing he's been snubbed for the MVP. They're sitting at home wondering, who are we going to play in the Eastern Conference Finals? And about 90 miles to the east, the Brooklyn Nets are boarding a plane because they have a game 6 in Milwaukee. that they have to go play to even get to those Eastern Conference Finals. And on that flight, Steve Nash is going to be talking to Mike D'Antoni and say, you know, I think I might have screwed up that middle of April. You know, when I had the opportunity to play Kevin Durant in the swing game against the Sixers and instead decided to play him against the Timberwolves because I wanted to, quote, help our team get over the loss to the Lakers. And then in that game against the Sixers, when our team was dead in the water, and then all of a sudden, it's a 5-point game with 2.5 minutes left. It's a 3-point game with 2:10 left. I had an opportunity to put Kyrie Irving back in and steal a victory, and I chose not to. And now we are in a war with Milwaukee while Philly is resting. So I understand why the Nets fans and Brandon should feel better potentially about a matchup against Philly. But you must get to a matchup against Philly. You must get there healthy, and you must get there in best, you know, the best case scenario is rested. And because of the choices made Wilds by rookie head coach Steve Nash over the last 2 days, their path just got far more tumultuous. And I think he is going to massively regret the KD decision and certainly not putting Kyrie back in once the Sixers put their starters back in.
All right, I agree with you about the KD decision. I would have rested him in Minnesota and played him tonight. I disagree with both of you about the Kyrie decision. I think Steve Nash made the right call, but for none of the reasons that are publicly being spoken. It wasn't because he wanted to reward the guys. It's not a carnival game. It wasn't because he was worried about Kyrie's health after being resting for a few games. And I don't buy Kyrie's post-game comments that it was good experience for that team. Here's a simple answer, Brandon. I think they had the best chance to win with Kyrie on the bench. Basketball is a game of runs and momentum, and everybody was into it. That unit was playing great. They were on a 19-2 run, and I hate to say it, even the refs were into it, because I'm not going to blame Philly for blowing the lead when there was multiple calls of Embiid getting hacked and Ben Simmons being pushed down that the refs were like, wow, momentum, this is rolling. I felt fine with it, Brandon, because that unit was playing so well.
They were playing so well, not only on offense, but on the defensive side. Look what they unpacked. Yeah. Every time Embiid got the ball at the perimeter, what happened? They went out there and double-teamed them. They made everything tough for those boys. They may have showed that a little too early. Probably should have saved that for the playoffs. But yeah, but let's think about this, though, Nick. When you talk about this tiebreaker, how many times have we seen a tie at the top since the merger? Twice? Three times? You act like this is something that happens all the time. So when you look at the remaining strength of schedule, you have the 76ers sitting at 22. And guess who's sitting at 9? The Nets. So probably in his next 5-game stretch, we'll probably see that flop. You'll see that flip between who's sitting at 1, who's sitting at 2. I would say the Nets will be at 1 in the next in his next 5-game stretch. And then you keep talking about Steve Nash as a rookie coach. Well, doesn't LeBron James coach? He's a general manager, the coach. We keep saying that the last 5-6 years with LeBron James. Well, Steve Nash is one of the greatest players to play the game, one of the smartest players to play the game. And who's sitting next to him on the bench? It's Mike D'Antoni. We're talking about 2-time coach of the year. Exactly. So, you know, I hear what you're saying, but at the end of the day, they showed their cards, and what they're focused on is the playoffs. Last night, you need to be confident. Everybody should be confident in the Nets and be worried about the 76ers.
Okay, so listen, I agree. Listen, Nash and D'Antoni, they have some great memories they can share on those team flights of when they were together and they had playoff failures together, and when they were separate and they had playoff failures separate. Like, they have both. It's like, hey, you remember that time when you were in Houston? Remember when we were in Phoenix together? Remember when we were the one seed and we ended up not getting there? If you're right, though, Brandon, and the Nets still get the one seed, then everything I just said is meaningless. If they still get the one seed. But I think, maybe I'm wrong, I think you agree with me that there are, even if you think the Nets are 90%, there are only three teams that can credibly win the conference. It is the Nets, it is the Sixers, and it is Milwaukee. And if the standings hold and you now have to beat Milwaukee, like, the math on this is very simple. Let's say the Nets are the best team in basketball. Let's say they're a 70-30 favorite over the Bucks and a 70-30 favorite over the Sixers. Well, do you know the odds of having a 70% chance come in and then a 70% chance come in again? It's 49%, a coin flip. And then a 70% chance against the Lakers. Now you're down to about a 36% chance. What you want is your path to the finals to be as easy as possible. The Nets don't think that matters. I think they are going to end up being
wrong.
That's
great.
What's up, Brandon?
That's great, but we're talking about the best team in basketball. Yes, of course they would want the easier path, but if they go up against the Heat, they go up against the Bucks, you really think they're going to be scared? Come on, man. Yeah, they're good teams as far as the Bucks are. I mean, the Heat are struggling this year. They're off and on. They're inconsistent. Right. But you really think the Nets will be afraid to go against Middleton and Giannis, who has two moves? Come on, Nick. You know better than that.
I think that the Bucks will be playing a game six against whomever they play in round two. And if a series goes six, all of a sudden either team can win it. And I do not think Philadelphia, if they're the one seed, is going to have to worry about a game six.
All right.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I get it. I understand that. It's a different team. Drew Holiday is a different team.
KD, Kyrie sat the bench. How about the Nets using a team record 29 different starting five members in this one? All right, let's talk this season. Let's talk some Zion now. Knicks taken down his Pelicans last night, but why is Zion being linked to the Knicks already in his young career? This is interesting. We'll bring in next. First things first. Drawing a blank, Browns bolstered their defense yesterday. They signed three-time Pro Bowler Jadeveon Clowney to a one-year deal worth up to about $10 million. So, Brandon, the best free agent now left that Clowney signed is blank. It's the best one out there.
Yeah, Jenna, this is an easy one if we take, you know, the off-the-field stuff away. And we're looking at Antonio Brown. You know, I got to go with Antonio Brown. I mean, he's been clean for a year. He's done a good job of really trying to turn the page and get back control of his life. But when you look on the field, this dude is 2 years removed from almost 1,300 yards, 15 touchdowns. Oh, my goodness, how the mighty have fallen. This dude can still play. We're talking about a guy that could potentially play late into his 36, 37. He takes care of his body. He is a freak. He loves working out. He loves eating egg whites and chicken breast plain every single day. This dude can still do it if he's put in the right situation. There's teams out there like the Baltimore Ravens, Nick, that can use an Antonio Brown. I know the last 2 years been tough, but this is a dude that can come in and produce right away. AB is the answer.
I'm going on a guy on the other side of the ball who might guard AB occasionally, and that's Richard Sherman. And he's a guy who you would be signing him for his on-the-field stuff. He's just, in 2019, he was an all-pro, but also the off-the-field. He is a great leader. He's a champion. He is a positive add to a locker room if you have a strong locker room and can deal with another strong presence. So I'm not saying that he should sign with the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm simply saying, Richard, go sign with the Chiefs. Come on. You're sick of not being in the Super Bowl. Go sign with the Chiefs. The Chiefs beat you in the Super Bowl. Okay, you couldn't cover Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins is gone now. Go sign with the Chiefs. Go ahead. Go. Do that, please. Do that.
I've got a little more hometown bias. Danny Amendola came on this very show and dissed Christ. Bill Belichick and the mighty New England Patriots. Danny Amendola was in Detroit, had 600 yards. Well, Danny, it's all good. Let bygones be bygones. Bill Belichick, lucky for you, doesn't have a heart. So, yeah, maybe he shipped you off unceremoniously, but he also didn't care about you insulting him on this show. So, Danny, come on back. We need an Edelman replacement, and you're the guy.
Oh, my gosh.
I like the name Danny. On to LeSean McCoy. Shady fired back off the Hall of Fame debate yesterday when he said he's got a good shot at making it to Canton, but that Julian Edelman does not. Brandon, LeSean McCoy's comments are blank.
Listen, it's debatable. That's what it is. I mean, you talk about LeSean McCoy. He has 15,000 yards from scrimmage, 89 touchdowns. There's only 14 running backs that has ever done that. And then there's three that aren't in the Hall of Fame that are currently playing. That's Shady McCoy, that's Adrian Peterson, and that's Frank Gore. So if you're looking just purely at the numbers, Nick, it's debatable.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think his comments are spot on in both regards. Obviously, Edelman has no shot at it, and Shady has an argument for the exact reasons Brandon mentioned. Exactly 15,000 yards from scrimmage and 89 touchdowns. Now, I think that he didn't say, I am going to make the Hall of Fame. He said, I have a good chance. I would put his chances at, he has a chance. It's a legitimate case. My guess is he ends up just short, or if he makes it, he has to wait a very long time. But it's a credible case to be made. Unlike Julian Edelman, which it took our producers 6 hours to try to find 12 minutes of Julian Edelman regular season highlights to put together for his Hall of Fame video.
I'm gonna go with
spot on Wilds. Oh, this catch. Never seen this catch before. My God.
Well, yeah. Can you run the iconic LeSean McCoy play? The producers, do we have a chance to tee that? Nick, what's the look? What's the iconic look? Oh, remember that great play LeSean McCoy made? I don't. It's a nice compiler.
The snow game.
It's a lot of touchdowns. Snow game.
Okay, maybe.
What about the little scamper in the snow in the blizzard?
Don't remember it. Is that iconic?
Don't remember.
Okay, here's the thing. My answer is rings hollow because it is interesting. They kind of have the opposite career. One guy compiles a lot in the regular season, doesn't do much in the postseason. In his quote, he said this, and you add two Super Bowls to go with it. I was like, man, LeSean McCoy won two Super Bowls? I looked up the stats. He didn't do anything. And I know a lot of times people say, he didn't do anything, only had this many catches, this many yards, this many receptions. No, literally.
No
attempts, no rushing, no receptions. The bright side is, because I'm an optimist, Jenna, no fumbles. So LeSean
so
McCoy,
who gets in first? Who gets
Edelman
in first,
Wilds? Shot. I don't think either.
Who gets in first, Wilds? Edelman or Shady?
Hall of Famer Julian Edelman.
He said neither.
Easier to get in when your first name is Hall of Famer. Talk some hoops. Knicks beat Zion on the Pelicans last night. But the focus here is a New York Post column that said the Knicks' quest to land Zion starts with a bang. Brandon, the Zion to New York media machine starting up is blank.
Oh, Lord. It's dusty, Jenna. It's one of those conversations been sitting on the shelf and you got to dust it off. In 2019, they had their shot and it was just bad luck. They didn't get him. Instead of Zion getting the Big Apple, he got the Big Easy. But I like this, though. I would love to see this. Why? Because in my lifetime, I want to be sitting down with my boys and I want to see the Jets get it done. I want to see the Chicago Bears march down Michigan Ave and celebrate another Super Bowl. I also want to see the Knickerbockers. I want to see the Knicks get it done. There's some things that we need to see in sports. If you put Zion there, who's now taking off and taking his game to a whole nother level with another point of person or two, we can see something that we've been waiting to see for a very long time, and that's the Knicks win the championship.
Yeah, this is Mission Impossible 4 for a number of reasons. First one is, it's impossible. It's not going to happen. The other one, why is it Mission Impossible 4? Because this is the fourth time in the last decade the Knicks' plan has been, let's just sign a guy who's not available or a guy who is available who has shown no interest. And it's also Mission Impossible 4 on a personal level for me because that movie is actually like what I very often, if I'm anxious or I can't sleep, I put it on. It soothes me. It makes me feel better. I probably watched it 35 times in parts.
Same.
And I feel like Wilds, that's what this column is for Knicks fans. It's like, oh, now we're back at home. We're reading about the superstar who plays for someone else, who that's what's going to save us. Like, that is their happy place. Reading about other teams' good players who are never actually going to play for the Knicks. So it's Mission Impossible 4. Don't ask me about why I watched that movie to fall asleep to. It just makes me feel good. It makes me happy.
I
know what's going
to
happen.
Why?
Okay, go ahead.
Out of all the films, out of all the films in all the world, you decide Mission Impossible 4 is like the nice movie to watch to relax to?
Yeah.
And then
5 and 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go, Miss Bopper, Ghost Protocol. 92% okay. Rotten
you
Tomatoes.
You've got mail, buddy.
Wildly underrated film.
Try you've got mail.
Wildly underrated. Go ahead, start.
No.
You've got
okay.
Can I throw in Prince of Tides while we're just throwing movies in?
Prince of Tides is not bad. Oh, okay, sorry. I'm going CAA Magic. We don't think Zion's going to end his career in New Orleans. We don't. So it's not only what the Knicks can do and are doing with Leon Rose, who used to run CAA Sports. It's also what the Pelicans might screw up. Remember, J.J. Redick just left, and he's like, you know what? I think the whole organization is dishonest. We're like, whoa, J.J., chill out, just because they wouldn't ship you to Brooklyn. But it was this cutting remark, which you rarely hear J.J. do. So I think not only will the Knicks get it done, I think the Pelicans will mess it up, Jenna.
All right.
Man.
Kevin Walls, I'm throwing it right back to you. Give us a little weird and wonderful from the world of baseball.
Hey, we had a big no-hitter last night, Jenna. Look at this. Top of the ninth, one out. The stretch from Abreu. Oh, it gets him. But here's the thing. Watch Naylor's right hand. This is back-to-back day. Buddy, you were safe. You touched the bag with the wrong hand. Don't worry. Your misfortune leads to a no-hitter, so it's a good moment for somebody. Just wasn't you. You got a chance to break it up. You would have lost the game anyway, so it's probably good for baseball that you were called out. So well done. Oh, how much nacho sauce are they serving at Dodger Stadium? Usually you go to the game, they give you a little Dixie cup. This guy got a whole vat of it. Boom, the ball lands in it. He's covered. His shirt is covered. His sleeves are covered. They get another angle. The back of his sleeve covered. So not only was it an impressive highlight for the guy, impressive highlight for Justin Turner. Great job by the concessionaire.
They should have brought him some nachos.
Wonderful work distributing. I'm sure he's going to get a nacho scholarship or sponsorship. He's going to get a scholarship to Nacho University.
Dodgers, by the way, off to a 10-2 start. How about that? Let's talk more about the newest Cleveland Brown, Jadeveon Clowney. Will he be a game changer for the Cleveland Browns? They took a big leap last year, and Clowney took notice. Take a listen to this.
Or is there anything about the Browns that you feel is very different than what you thought a year ago?
Yeah, they're winning. They got a great team. They're definitely on a winning team. You saw they won 12 games last year, right? More than what my team I played for won last year, I think.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Now talk a little Cleveland Browns. So yesterday, the Browns made a big free agent splash. They signed 3-time Pro Bowler Jadeveon Clowney. So how about this? Clowney and Myles Garrett, nice little pass rushing duo there. I'm going to let Clowney tell you how excited he is for that. Take a listen.
How would you describe your career so far and sort of where you feel like you are in your evolution as a player right now?
The funny part thing I tell people about my career started out slow because I got hurt my first game of my career with a micro fracture, probably the worst injury you can have in this game. And, I don't think everybody got to see the person they drafted yet. I think I'm working back towards that, but I'm well on my way now. I made 3 Pro Bowls, and it's funny because I ain't never really been all the way healthy to the point where I felt like nothing bothering me. So, but I still can dominate in this league. I know that. But if I ever reach that my max potential or getting back there like I feel now, man, they say the sky's the limit, but it's probably higher than that. And they got footprints on the moon. Well, that's what we're trying to reach.
All right. So, Brandon, what do you think realistically? How big of an impact will Clowney have on the Browns this season?
I think he can come in and contribute right away and make a huge impact. This is a good bet for the Cleveland Browns, not a great bet because of what he talked about, his injuries. You know, we're years in, and we're still talking about the microfracture that you sustained coming into the NFL. That's a big deal. He's right, but that thing can hold you back and can derail your career. But this is a good bet for the Cleveland Browns because this is a guy who now is working out, training, rehabbing, doing all the things he needs to really come in and impact the game in a major way. The Cleveland Browns, they're sitting 17th in the National Football League in defense, 15th in sack. And this is a dude in the last 25 games had 4.5 sacks. I know that's low, but when you think about how he went to one team to the next and he really didn't have an offseason, really wasn't training, I'm really excited to see what this year is going to be for him because the Cleveland Browns are right there on the edge. Nick, you love Baker Mayfield. Obviously, mm-hmm. the offense took a huge step next year. And if this defense can come around and they can make a huge stride when it comes to sacking the quarterback and putting pressure on the quarterback, yep. man, this team can be dangerous.
Yeah, the questions for Cleveland, I believe, are more on the defensive side than the offensive side. Offensive side, they have a good offensive line. They have a great running game. They have a very good receiving core. And even if you're not high on Baker, nobody at this point thinks Baker's a bad quarterback. And some people, such as myself, think he's a very good quarterback. So offense, I think they're taken care of. The question is the defense, most notably the defense against the pass. You have Myles Garrett, who's going to give you basically, you know, almost a sack a game. Can you pair another pass rusher alongside him? And can the secondary live up to its draft status? Denzel Ward, Grant Delpit, Greedy Williams were all first or second round picks, dealt with injuries. They spent a bunch of money on Josh Johnson to bring him over. So they hope that young secondary reaches its potential and that it's helped by bookended pass rushers in the great Myles Garrett and the potentially great Clowney. So I really like the signing, but full disclosure on this, Wilds, I cannot quit Jadeveon Clowney. Every year, I'm like, he's going to have a dozen sacks. Do you remember the play? This isn't a fair comparison for Clowney, but do you remember Tyrus Thomas? Guy went to LSU, he was a top five NBA draft pick. For the first 5 years of his career, I was like, man, this is the year Ty Thomas breaks out. I really believe in him. I think he's in, he just never happened. I was like, every year I was waiting for the Ty Thomas breakout year. Clowney's been better than that. He's right, he made 3 Pro Bowls, was an All-Pro in 2016, but he's never put it all together. And if he can and if he does, he is an instant impact player. There's no question about that.
Yeah. Okay, you and I are in the same boat because I saw analysis on this signing and everybody wants to be so serious. Like, you know what? I don't like big names. What I like is production. I like to see sacks. I like to see defensive run stoppers. Like, not me. You know what I like? College highlights. It's the same reason I like Odell Beckham. Not in college, but boom, the one-handed catch. So now you got the strip sack and grab the ball, and you got the one-handed catch guy both on the Browns. Now, do either of their knees work? Not 100% sure, to be totally honest. Clowney's had, Brandon, 5 knee surgeries. 5. He's 28.
Yes.
Like, huh? It's like Brad Pitt's 54. You're like, huh? Right. But the opposite way. He seems to be an old 28. But you've had more experience with sort of these injuries and guys in the locker room than I have. Do you feel like, there's 2 things I'm going to ask you. One, do you feel like there's a point where you have so many injuries that not only physically can you not get the job done, but mentally you can't get the job done, that you get up gingerly, that you attack the game differently? And 2, does it worry you that it's now 4 teams in 4 years, that there's just sort of like bouncing around the league sort of gives you the lack of, I don't know, a home?
Yeah. Well, let me answer the last question. I feel like that's why his career has been derailed, because he's been so focused on the business and not the play. He switched agents a couple years ago to Kennard McGuire. There's a little bit more stability there. But remember how he left Houston. He was trying to get a mega deal and never got that. And he's been searching for that for a very long time. Now, when you look at the injuries, the hardest part is the recovery. So you're dead on, spot on when you're talking about the mental part. It's, can you get up every single day not feeling like the Clowney that we saw back in South Carolina, that big play that we all continue to watch, that highlight, taking somebody's helmet off? Like, can you get back to that when you're feeling like Like, you're just feeling terrible. That's what Clowney has been dealing with. That's the hardest part in sports, is dealing with those injuries in the offseason.
Yep, that's right.
All right, see if you can stay healthy long enough, put it all together in Cleveland. Time for Knicks NBA medals. Kyrie had 37 last night, but it was a solo mission. Steve Nash sat Kyrie for the last final 8-plus minutes, so no medal for Kyrie. Nick, who did make your medal stand today?
Kyrie could have gotten a medal, but didn't come back in, didn't end up, they end up losing. He gets just off the stand. You know who does get one, though? Luka, bronze medalist, thanks to this game winner. Now, you guys know how I feel. Game winners only count if it's intentional. No lucky, you get no credit. Jason Tatum's banked in three, no credit. I'm proud to report this morning, Luke and I worked on this exact shot for years growing up. This was intentional. No luck involved. Luka with the game winner of the year. Bronze medalist. Silver medalist. Joel Embiid. Oh, the Sixers might have fell apart late, but it wasn't Embiid's fault. 39-13, doing it all basically in the first three quarters. His third quarter was marvelous. DeAndre Jordan did his best, but DeAndre Jordan, you're too old and you're a little too slow. Gold medalist. Oh, Steph Curry. Steph says, we're going to make this play-in game by hook or crook. I'm going to drop 42 as my team wins by, what's that final margin? Oh, okay. They won by 134 points over the Thunder. The Thunder, by the way, America, you talk about Kevin Durant's Coinbase investment. You know what my investment that's gone up 54X is? Betting against the Thunder since the All-Star break. Oh, my God, printing money. Thank you, Steph Curry. They barely covered. They won by 40 points.
Question.
So there it is. There's your medals. Yeah, what up, Brandon? What's the question? Tell me.
Great job with the medals, but I got a question for you. Were you scared watching that game last night between the Nets and the 76ers? You had to be scared, bro.
Yes. Yes, at the end. Yeah, they stopped. The Sixers stopped scoring. Yeah, I was very scared. I was absolutely scared. I was going to call in sick today if they blew that lead. Absolutely scared. Didn't happen, though. No medal, right. Kyrie. Luka, good job.
All right, we got to get back to our top story. We were just talking about it, the no fear from Nick. Battle between the East's top two teams. But where was Kyrie in crunch time? We'll talk Steve Nash's curious decision to sit him late next. First things first. Back here, head to Philly. Nets Sixers billed as the Battle of the Stars, but Brooklyn took the steam out of that one. Sat Kevin Durant, so no KD, no Harden, no LaMarcus Aldridge, no Blake Griffin. Joel Embiid took full advantage, 39-13 for him. But this was a close game at the end until Steve Nash sat Kyrie for the final 8 minutes, and the Sixers hung on to win. So why'd you do it, Steve Nash? Why sit Kyrie? Take a listen.
A little bit, you know, would have thought about it. But really, you know, I didn't want to take the group out that was doing so well. They put their starters back in. I think I wanted to reward those guys for playing as well as they did. Kyrie was amazing for us tonight, but you know, he also has had a few days off. I didn't want to put him back in and risk any sort of return to play injury.
All right, we got Nets analyst Sarah Kustok with us this morning. Sarah, good morning. Thanks for being with us. You called this game. What'd you make of Nash leaving Kyrie on the bench with a chance to win at the end?
Jenna, I think what we've seen out of this Brooklyn team and organization is a level of consistency in what their priority is. And their priority is trying to get healthy. And this, to me, was another aspect of it. You heard what Steve Nash had to say after the game and even throughout the course of the broadcast down the end. I brought up the fact that I was curious if we would see Kyrie Irving come back in the game. But I think you look at a couple points with this. One, at that 8.5 minute mark when he came out, Alize Johnson gave a foul to get Kyrie Irving out of the game. It was very clear, down by 22, that Kyrie Irving and the Nets felt like he was done with the night, in particular after having been off the last couple days, played 33 minutes, and things changed. The 21-2 run that the Nets went on, I think, started to make you wonder if Kyrie would go back in. But you see the body language, you see just the mindset. It didn't look like Kyrie Irving was going to be re-entering this game, and give credit to that Nets group. They got them back in the game, because this is the thing. And Nick, I know you know this, Brandon, you know this, all of it. When you are looking at trying to get your team ready for a title contention, a lot of circumstances like this, high leverage moments for some of these role and complementary players, they're important. We put so much value on experience. And to me, this was an opportunity for some of these guys to try and get some of that experience. And big picture wise, this Nets team that is still trying to get healthy. It wasn't just about one game. It's not just about the one seed. It's about making sure that down the stretch run, they're doing everything they can to try and maintain the health of these guys.
Well, okay, I respect and appreciate that. And if it's about experience, then bully for the Nets, because they're going to get a lot of very important playoff experience now when in round two they're facing the Bucks instead of potentially in round two facing the Hornets. So, yeah, they'll get a lot of experience in a series that now is losable because no one – I know Heat fans will get mad at me. Nobody can beat the Nets out of the East except for two teams. Philly and Milwaukee can. Now, even if Brandon and Sarah believe they won't, I think everyone acknowledges they can. It's possible. You don't want to have to play them both. And the Nets have essentially opted in now to playing them both. This is a two-game swing in the standings because one team gets a win, one team gets a loss, and it's the tiebreaker. And to me, Steve, listen, there is a reason that experience as a coach tends to matter. I know Steve Kerr, you know, in his instant success, followed by Ty Lue and followed by Nick Nurse's instant success, made us think it doesn't. But historically, coaching experience matters. And I would argue Steve Nash had his first bad week as the Nets head coach. I thought if you knew you could only play Durant in one of the two games, Minnesota, who you could beat without any of your stars anyway, or Philly, you play him against Philly. And in this game, everyone's pointing to when it got to three. Well, it got to 12 with 4.5 minutes left, and Simmons and Embiid checked back in. When that happens, Kyrie's supposed to follow, and you're supposed to try to steal that game. So I listen, Nash has done a nice job, and he's been dealt a difficult hand because of all the things he's had to deal with to go along with a super talented team. But I don't think you can say that he's handled what I consider to be their biggest game of the season properly in not having Durant available and then opting against playing Kyrie at the end, Brandon. I think it's going to hurt them in the playoff seeding.
Well, let's think about it this way, Nick. At the end, if they're standing and they're champions, will we be talking about the decisions that Steve Nash made?
No.
And if they were right or if they are wrong, we're not going to be talking about it. Last night showed they showed their hand. They showed their cards. They're showing that their priority is getting to the playoffs healthy. Their priority is becoming the champions. That's it. They have a lot of experience on that bench. They got a lot of experience on that team. From KD, you're talking about the playoffs, James Harden, Kyrie Irving. You have champions on that team. Mike D'Antoni, we're talking about two-time coach of the year. Like this whole conversation around experience and rookie coach, it means nothing really because this team is sitting right there where they need to be. Who would have thought that this team that traded for James Harden in January, the beginning of January, would be sitting two in the East? Nobody thought that. They thought this was going to be an implosion. That's what everybody thought. So for them to be sitting right here says a lot. Walking away from that game, I think they should be more confident than ever, Wilds. When you go down to the wire with Nick is saying the best team in the East, and you're without James Harden, you're without KD, Kyrie checks out 8 minutes to go in the game, they're down 22, and then a JV team bring you back. Like, you should walk away from that game more confident.
I guess so. I think I agree with Nick here. Where the idea that we're always looking towards tomorrow, we're always looking for the playoffs, well, there's a little carpe diem that I think the Nets need. There is something to say for the consistency of a squad. And Sarah, I want to show you a graphic on how many lineups this team has used. Last night, DeAndre Jordan, hey, welcome back to the starting lineup. You got a bunch of DNPs. The teams that switch up their lineup this often are, for lack of a better term, terrible. The Nets are still good. Now, on the plus side, you can say optimistically, look out, imagine how good they're going to be once they get their real starting five. On the pessimistic side, see, it's like, when you get to playoffs, you have the least experienced and cohesive team in the entire league.
Do you fall on the optimistic side or the pessimistic side, Sarah?
I think regardless of group, I would fall on the optimistic side just because this to me is an example of the versatility. And to go to Nick's point about this being the most important game, there's still 17 games left here in the regular season and a difference of one game. But I think overall, the perspective that you bring up, Kevin, which I think is a really good one and an interesting one, it shows to me the amount of players that have gotten a chance to get a feel for how this team wants to play. And I think the fact that you have the significant amount of games missed by your most talented players, your most impactful players, and the players that you expect to carry you throughout the postseason, to me, that bodes well for the confidence of this group. And as Brandon said, who do you think is coming out of that game feeling better? Do you think Philadelphia feels good that they had to?
I agree. I
think Doc Rivers is excited about the fact that he had to put Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons thought that they were done for the night. And so I think there's the opposite side of things of the way a group feels and doing what they are doing in a rhythm.
So I agree with a lot of that. And I think Philly has to hate the way they closed the second quarter, the third quarter, and the last 8 minutes of the game. They dumb play after dumb play, and at the end they could not manufacture a basket. But there's two points here that I think are worth drilling down on for a moment. One is, Sarah and Brandon, the point that I hear is they're focused on the postseason. I agree. The point I am trying to make is they are confusing themselves if they think there is any world that exists where a path to a championship is easier if you have to play Milwaukee in round two versus the Hawks, the Celtics, the Knicks, any of those mediocre teams that are going to be the one seed round two opponent. And the other thing is, I don't want to be rude here. I hear there, you know, Nash said it about Kyrie. You're worried about getting healthy. Kyrie wasn't out with an injury. Kyrie was out on his paid time off, his personal leave. And so
yeah,
now
but the reality,
Kyrie's personal leave. Hold on, wait. Let me ask the question. Kyrie's personal days are now bleeding into his working days? Like Kyrie took time away from the team and now he's also you can't use him, reinsert him into a fourth quarter? Like that ain't great. Because maybe I missed the
let
injury,
me ask you a
but he
question.
Wasn't on the injury report.
Let me ask you a question, Nick. Is the sentiment through the players or you know around the league that you know the 72 games is a little bit too much? That you know they feel like they're overworked and this whole load.
Yes.
Okay, so that's what's happening right now. Teams and players are getting creative on how to load management. We know that the league frowns upon it. You know, they're starting to penalize teams who do it, but now they got to get creative with it. That's all you're seeing. This team is doubling down on the postseason. They're thinking about big picture. They're not worrying about playing against the Bucks and Miami. Miami? Are you kidding me? And then you're talking about the tiebreaker. You're a guy who loves stats. I'll just finish here. You're a guy who loves stats. You always talk about probability, okay? Since 1985, the number one seed was determined by a tiebreaker four times. So what's the probability of that? Like, there's 17 games left, like Sarah talked about. There's so much ball. We're not going to – this game is not even going to count. It's not even going to matter.
Okay. Well, I vehemently disagree with you on that. And you're right. Since 1985, only four games have been determined by the tiebreaker, or four seasons. But far more have been determined by one game. And this – if the Nets – lose the East, either finishing with the same record as the Sixers or one game behind them, this game was the swing game. This game was the difference. And Sarah, you're around the team. If this game was close, Kyrie wasn't on some minutes restriction, right? Like if they don't go down 22 in the fourth and check him out, he was ready to play the full game. And then they took him out because everyone thought the game was over, and then they chose not to put him back in. Like, he was available for the full game if need be, as far as I understand it.
That was my understanding. But I think it goes back to the big picture of why he was taken out, the timing he was taken out. And Nick, these are things I don't know. It's a part of the decision making of how the course of that game went. But I don't think for this Brooklyn team, it's just about looking to the postseason. However, look at the fact that they have had so many players miss so much time. They have got to be focused on making sure on the day to day that they have guys in their peak form, that as they finish off this season, there's no hiccups in terms of injury. And I think that was more of the factor of Kyrie's minutes, where he was at after a few minutes, after, you know, that final stretch of the game. So I think overall, and I wouldn't necessarily say a 37-9 night is bad impacts from being out due to personal reasons, taking care of a family matter.
And Sarah, you know, the biggest tell of where their focus is when talking about the big picture was watching them on the sideline. This looked like a football preseason game where the stars are on the sideline with their ball caps on and sunflower seeds in their mouth. That's what their focus was last night. Those guys were just cheering on their team. Come on, this game isn't going to matter.
That's not a good sign.
More musical chairs for the Nets in their lineup last night. Sarah Kustoff, thank you so much. Nets take the L to the 76ers. More on that game in a bit. We got ourselves 2 weeks now until the NFL draft. Why is Trevor Lawrence saying he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder? Find out next. First things first. Back here talking some Trevor Lawrence. 2 weeks away from the draft, Trevor Lawrence locked in at number one. Been that way basically since he entered college. As a result, we haven't heard much from him till now. Recently talked about what motivates him heading into the NFL. This is what he has to say. He said, it's hard to explain that. I want people to know that I'm passionate about what I do and it's really important to me. But I don't have this huge chip on my shoulder that everyone's out to get me and I'm trying to prove everybody wrong. I just don't have that. I can't manufacture that. And I don't want to. We got former number two overall pick LeVar Arrington joining us now. LeVar, good morning. Thanks for getting up,
hanging out.
What would you make
of
Trevor Lawrence's comments? Well, we love it. What would you make of his comments if you were the Jaguars right now, hearing what he had to say?
I love it. I mean, to me, it's a man with a plan. You know, and someone who, you know, there's not a right or wrong idea of having a chip on your shoulder. But this makes me think back to a guy by the name of Peyton Manning. Didn't he wear that same number? Did Peyton Manning wear 16 in college? I think he did, if my memory serves me correctly. Ooh. I could be wrong, but I will say this. It's very similar in the sense that Peyton Manning didn't win the Heisman. That was all that was left for Trevor Lawrence in college with a 2-loss record over the duration of his time in school. I think that Trevor Lawrence is someone who has a great support group around him. This support group has been grooming Trevor Lawrence for the longest time, not just on his on-field skills and acumen, but off-field. And how he views himself, how he views his community, how he views his family. Right. And this is a guy that has superior, supreme confidence. He knows where he wants to go. He has an idea how he's going to do it. And he's going to need every bit of that going to Jacksonville. But I like this approach by Trevor Lawrence. There's really, if you think about it, what is there really for him to have a chip on his shoulder for? He just married his high school sweetheart. You know, he's a God-fearing man. He's just got a lot of things that you check off the boxes and you say, you know, that one time that they were crossing the bumpy water and Jesus was taking a nap while everybody else was panicking on board. Jesus knew something that everybody else didn't know. And maybe Trevor Lawrence is the new Jesus Shuttlesworth in football, you know?
I love it. The humility, and that's exactly who this guy is. And the reason why I like this, because I spent 13 years in the locker room seeing guys, including myself, trying to be somebody else. This is what you want out of your quarterback. You want your quarterback to be exactly who they are. Because a lot of times we try to put people in a box. We try to say, you know what? This is how Peyton Manning did it. This is how Tom Brady did it. Russell Wilson, this is how he gives his pregame speeches. Be that, because they are great. Trevor Lawrence is who he is. Just continue to be who you are. He's humble. He loves the game. That's the only thing we need to worry about is, do you love the game? Can you produce? Do you have the culture? Will guys follow you? And guys follow Trevor Lawrence. Nick, I hear you over there, and I know we always see differently when it comes to the quarterback position, but buddy, you're the resident GM. This is what you want to hear out of your quarterback. Why would you want your quarterback to come in and try to get outside of themselves? That's where mistakes happen. That's where they get uncomfortable. Nick. And that's when we see bust.
No. Nick is about to go a different direction.
Please don't do it. Don't do it. Let me make this very clear.
I see it all in his face.
I would trade 4 first-round picks for Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence is a singular prospect. I think Trevor Lawrence is going to have a fantastic career. So my commentary here is less about Trevor Lawrence and more about the idea we're talking about, which is it be good to be unhealthy, essentially, which is, you read this whole article, he talks about a work-life balance, talks about how he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder, talks about how football is not everything to him, all the exact type of things you would desperately want to hear if Trevor Lawrence was your son, was your friend, was your fiance, was your brother. And if we are being honest, none of the things you want to hear if Trevor Lawrence is your quarterback. Now, Trevor Lawrence, so good, I don't think it's going to matter. And this is a very unpopular stance amongst millennial, which I am, media members. But it is, I believe, a true fact from history. The most successful people typically are unhealthy, unbalanced, and a little off. And they aren't super happy. They don't have a great work-life balance. They are maniacally focused on their craft, which is, again, not how I would want any of my kids to lead their life. But if you're saying I'm a Jags fan, you probably are really just rooting for the clothes. And you kind of do want your guy to be maniacally focused. Now, again, I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be a superstar. But Wilds, I think it has become very in vogue to act as if there is not a trade-off in a work-life balance. Because it's like, no, it's what everyone should shoot for. Okay, sure. We'd be a healthier society. But I don't think Steve Jobs had a great work-life balance. I just don't. Maybe I'm wrong. Mm-mm. I don't think Bezos, when he was building Amazon, was like, okay, hey, guys, no emails on the weekend. It's time for me to unwind. Nope, not how it works. Doesn't seem like Jordan
that's
did either, by the way. Jordan seemed
saying,
maniacally focused. No, if you read the
that's
whole article, they talk about
what
it.
He's
they
saying,
talk,
though.
Well, no. But the whole, it was not just the chip on your shoulder. The whole thing is about how, like, I'm not going to live and die with what happens with my football team, and win or lose. And now maybe it's because he's very rarely lost. I applaud him for that. Wilds, I don't think that's necessarily the greatest approach if you want to be the greatest. And I think a lot of history backs me up on that.
Okay. I agree with you to a certain extent. However, we know there has been a fetishization of rise and grind, and it's been perpetrated by the media, by the fans, and by sneaker companies. Oh, what time you were at the gym? I got to the gym at 3:30 in the morning. Right. And then you read the research, like, you know what? You should actually get 10 hours of sleep if you're an elite athlete. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm still mad I got drafted behind Joe Blow. Oh, not me. It's actually better to have a short memory. Make it easy. Oh, I play angry. I grit my teeth, and I want to kill somebody. I'm out for blood. Oh, not Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr out there like, you know what? Better to play with joy and better to relax. Like, do I think Usain Bolt is there every day before he gets done and does his sprinting?
That he's it's documented. He's not one of them
big
time.
I lost a race when I was in seventh grade. He's like, no, he's chill. He's smiling. He's relaxing. And I do think there's a little bit of a generational shift, Nick, but I think the pivot point was Jordan. That because Jordan was so maniacal, and up to the point where we saw in the documentary that he still had grudges, the media fell in line with that. And now we force all of our great athletes to talk like that. Do I think it was a mistake for Trevor Lawrence to say this?
No, because I think it was honest. I think you guys are right. However, if I was his publicist, would I be like, hey, you know what? Let's pass on that Sports Illustrated article? Yeah, I would have. Because I think fans want to consume the rising fetish. I don't know, Brandon.
I loved it.
It's just like a simple thing. Listen, we just that's what we want is the fans.
Here's the deal. I live this, right? So all your points are valid. I understand what Nick is saying, but here's the deal. In the locker room, I've seen so many guys flame out because they try to be somebody else. Even me as a wide receiver, when I first got in the league, what I would do is I would have our video department every offseason give me the top 10 wide receivers. We're talking about Reggie Wayne. We're talking about Marvin Harrison, Chad Ochocinco, T.O., Randy Moss, et cetera, Steve Smith, like all the guys, Larry Fitzgerald, and I would watch everybody. And then what I found myself doing was trying to be like them. And then around year four, there was a shift. I read this book called Good to Great. And then it was like, what is your head talk? What makes you the best at what you do and stick to that? And I start leaning to, I am the biggest and strongest wide receiver in the NFL. So every time a DB stand in front of me, they're going to feel exactly that. I don't have sweet feet like Chad Ochocinco. I can't run fast like Randy Moss. That's not my game. So I've seen so many guys, especially at the quarterback position, come in and say, you got to be this type of quarterback. You got to be a pocket passer, or you got to lead like Tom Brady, or you got to manage the line of scrimmage like Peyton Manning, and they flame out. Find out who you are and stick to that. My last thing I would say, LeVar, is this. Every time I meet a young athlete, I give them two books, both by Dan Millman, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and then also Body Mind Mastery, because that teaches the athletes how not to be what Nick is saying, where you can have a little bit of health, you can have some balance, and still be a high performer on the field. And when you get off the field or the court or the pitch, you know, you're balanced and you're not who you were when the lights were on.
You know, I always have my guys watch The Count of Monte Cristo, because there are a lot of messages, a lot of jewels in that movie. And I think that as I look at this and I think about how that applies to the movie, not enough time to draw the comparisons with Trevor Lawrence, but Trevor Lawrence is like he's like a Dantes, you know. He's like a Count of Monte Cristo. He found the treasure, right? And he's coming into the league as someone with all this expectation of who he's going to be identity wise. And you know what? Whatever Trevor's experience in life had been, you best believe, just like that movie, he's had his struggles. He's had his things that he's had to overcome, his challenges in life. So when we think about if he's like, you know, maniacal and going crazy over if he's going to be great as a pro, I think the balance and you guys saying him looking or not having a balance or being a little off is a benefit to players. I think that if you see a guy with balance and has a sense of purpose and an idea of what their direction is, that's a far dangerous man than one who doesn't, in my humble estimation.
Right.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.